हरिः ओम् तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः. हरिः ओम्. जस्ट् अ स्मोल् वर्क् आफ् फैव् वर्सस् वि वाण्ट् टु सी बिफोर् वि स्टार्ट् दि आक्चुवल् अदर् टेक्स्ट्. इवन् दिस् वर्क् इस् आल्सो फार् अट्लि कण्टेम्प्लेशन् ओन्लि. Very profound works, tiny but profound teaching, the presence. As I said, bhaktihi, devotion, comes under the title of upasanam. Veda Shastram presents three disciplines. Vedashastra presents three disciplines as a means of knowledge to help us arrive at the ultimate truth, to help us accomplish the ultimate goal. Of course, it's very clear. We have been analyzing the Purusharthas, the human pursuits, for a long time. And we know how this artha kama dharma mokshaha, the four human pursuits, are there. Even though pursuits are said to be four, all the four can be reduced to one. The three can be reduced to one, the fourth, that is mokshaha. Because through the pursuit of artha, searching for security, what is ultimately sought after through security is only this everlasting freedom, happiness. Through the pursuit of the kama, the enjoyment of pleasures of any type, whether it's intellectual pleasures or sensory pleasures or aesthetic pleasures, through the enjoyment of all pleasures also, what is sought after by a human being is only happiness. By living a life of dharma, even following the virtues or performing all forms of activities, by performing nityamittika karmas, by consciously avoiding pratishuddha karmas, by fulfilling karma karmas in conformity with dharma, even by doing paischitta karmas, or by doing anything, even through charitable activities, if at all we accumulate punyam. So dharma anushtanam is for Dharma anushtanam is for the accumulation of punyam. Why should I? Dharma means, the word dharma is a very elaborate word. It's not just coming to certain things alone. Doing one's own duties or strictly following, performing nityamittika karmas, regularly performed duties, consciously avoiding the prohibited actions which are against dharma, when fulfilling one's karma karmas in conformity with dharma, all these is ultimately for accumulating punyam. So the more punyam we accumulate, the more we will be blessed with enjoyment of pleasures. So through the accumulation of punyam also, what is sought after is only happiness. Therefore, happiness is the ultimate goal of a human being. What is ultimately sought out is happiness. When you say happiness, itself means what? Limitlessness. Happiness means limitlessness. Limitlessness means fullness. We have to understand, in the Vedantic parlance, limitlessness means happiness. Happiness means fullness. All these three words are synonyms. Synonymous. Why? Because in being limitless, in being full, there is happiness. In being limited, there is unhappiness. Therefore, limitlessness implies happiness only. And that's why when you say limitlessness means it has no beginning, it has no end. So happiness is all ever of the nature of fullness, limitlessness. Happiness has no beginning, happiness has no end. Happiness does not undergo any change, because happiness, being limitlessness, it is the very nature of the reality. It's always there, everywhere then. Therefore, the moksha, what is implied by the word moksha is happiness only. That's with this another word for happiness, which is nirvanam, isn't it? Nirvanam is equal to moksha. Moksha is equal to freedom. Freedom is equal to freedom from unhappiness. Freedom from unhappiness is equal to happiness. Isn't it? That's why if we break the word nirvanam, vanam means distress, suffering. Nirvanam means what? Freedom from suffering, freedom from the distress, freedom from unhappiness. Happiness only. Therefore, happiness, limitlessness, fullness of happiness is the choiceless, common, human, universal, choiceless goal of the entirety of the humanity of all times, of all places. That's why it's called Paramaha Purushartha Mokshaha, absolute end. And this end is something to be discovered as the nature of the reality. And the reality has been discovered as one's own Swarupam. Therefore, happiness has been discovered as one's own Swarupam. Got it now? This happiness has been discovered as the nature of the reality. And the reality has been discovered as one's own essential nature. Therefore, in discovering one's own essential nature, happiness has to be discovered. Happiness becomes discovered. So that is very well known. So this everlasting happiness, non-arriving, non-departing, everlasting happiness is the ultimate goal to be accomplished by a human being, which is in terms of discovering it. Attainment of the moksha is in terms of discovering the happiness, discovering the end. Therefore, Veda Shastram, come to the point. Veda Shastram prescribes three disciplines to enable a human being accomplish this ultimate goal in terms of moksha by discovering the truth. Shastram prescribes three disciplines: karma, upasanam, jnanam. There's no fourth discipline, only three disciplines. Karma, upasanam, jnanam. Of course, jnanam itself is moksha. And how are we going to jnanam? Is a discipline means what? Jnana yogaha. So being given to the discipline of jnana yogaha is going to these three steps, shravanam, mananam, nidhyasam. Ultimately, one has to attain jnanam, which itself is moksha. But to attain that jnanam by going through the disciplines of shravanam, mananam, nidhyasanam, to understand the teaching and to have the doubts resolved in the teaching and to assimilate, ascertain the teaching, of course, one has to go through these three steps of jnana yoga, shravanam, mananam, nidhyasanam. But even if a person goes through shravanam and mananam, still to be successful in one's contemplation, to ascertain the teaching, to be able to enjoy the benefit of the teaching, one must be mentally qualified. So shravanam will not be effective, mananam will not be effective, nidhyasanam will be impossible if a person does not take care of one's mental well-being, the sense mental preparedness. Definitely mind has to be given all attention. This mind, delicate darling baby, should be given importance and should be taken care of. Otherwise, the discipline of jnana yoga will be of no use. So mind has to become disciplined means mind has to be adequately pure and steady. And for this mental preparedness in terms of adequate, the purity and steadiness, Shastram prescribes what? For mental preparation, for mental antahkarna naischalyam, Shastram prescribes the discipline of upasanam, meditation. When you say upasanam, literally means meditation. Meditation means what should we meditate upon? So Ishwaraha should be the object of object of focus. Bhagavan must be the object of focus, not anything else. If Bhagavan is the object of our focus, then there is upasana. It is dhyanam. It is saguna brahma upasana. Isn't it? So saguna brahma upasana or ishara upasana, dhyanam is for antahkana naischalyam, mental steadiness, for steadying the unstable, restless, agitated mind. The only means is definite upasana. But at the same time, upasana is possible, steadying the mind is possible, only the mind is adequately pure also. Because the impure mind, what is impure mind? The jealousy, hatred, anger, disturbing thoughts, no, disturbing thoughts in the form of desires. Desires, we do not create desires. Desires arise by themselves. Desires are there naturally. They just surface from subconscious mind. They just surface. They become triggered for so many things. The external situation becomes nimittam, instrumental for the desires to be triggered, for them to surface. Desires arise uncontrollable. Desires are part of us. They are not created by us. So there's no way of undoing the desires. Desires to arise in the form of likes, strong likes and dislikes. So raga, dvesha, then krodha. So kamaha, krodha, lobha, greed. Moha, delusion. Madaha, pride. Matsaryam, jealousy. So these are said to be the six enemies. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada. Lobha, mada. Kamaha, krodaha, lobaha, moha, madaha, matsaryam. Matsarya, all the six enemies, jealousy. So these are naturally there in every mind. There's no mind which is absolutely free from these sixfold, okay, emotions. Kamaha, krodaha, lobaha, moha, madaha, matsarya. They're all there naturally. If you're born a human being, they're all there in subconscious mind for every individual. There's no mind which is absolutely free from all these sixfold problems. But they remain dormant, latent in subconscious, because they've been coming, traveling with us from janma after janma after janma. They are something new because they have their origin where in ignorance. An ajnanam is anadi. Self-ignorance, ignorance of the reality is beginningless. Ignorance being beginningless, error caused by ignorance also is beginningless. Superimposition of limitations of anatma upon the atma is also beginningless. So erroneous notions we entertain about ourselves also is beginningless. So erroneous notion caused fundamental desire is beginningless. So any number of desires which arise are beginningless. Okay, so beginningless problems, anadi problems. That's why samsara is anadi. But still samsara has an end. The samsara is caused by ajnana. Samsara can be ended. How? By discovering, by jnana. Jnana to kaivalya. So that's why we say this kamaha, krodaha, this desire in the form of likes and dislikes, anger, fear, anxiety, even greed, jealousy, all these are there dormant, latent in every subconscious mind, every own subconscious mind. One thing is, as long as they don't surface, we seem to be great people, Mahatmas. But anybody's mind, any time it can be triggered, any external situation can become nimittam, instrumental. Okay, Parabdha plays a role. Okay, and it can be triggered, it can surface. When it surfaces, we have no control. It gets expressed in our behavior uncontrollably. That is why it becomes guilt. It contributes for an experience of guilt and hurt and pain and damages relationships. Everything, anything can happen. Anyway, so these are there, but the degree may vary from person to person. The proportion of, you know, how much, you know, these impurities are there in the mind, that it may vary from person to person. But there's no mind which is absolutely free from these emotions. Therefore, they are there, they're surfacing. So as long as they surface, they become triggered. There are impurities. And as long as impurities are there, unless these impurities are taken care of, One has to become relatively free from, relatively pure minded, in order to be steady minded. Only then the discipline of Jnana Yoga, when followed, will become effective. Shravanam will be effective, Mananam will be effective, Nidhyasanam, contemplation will be possible only if a person has certain degree of mental purification and mental stillness. That is why for mental purification, Shastram prescribes the discipline of Karma Yoga. Is it clear now? Karma Yoga. Karma Yoga, why? There's no choice, no shortcut method. Following strictly the discipline of Karma Yoga is specifically for neutralizing, managing one's own mental impurities. So following the discipline of Karma Yoga will not remove the impurities totally. They'll help you manage your emotion. Again, it's an important lesson. Will Karma Yoga totally remove all my impurities? No. Karma Yoga will not remove the impurities totally. Living a life of Karma Yoga will definitely help you manage your emotions prudently. That is how Karma Yoga contributes for intellectual sharpness. So for Antahkarana Shuddhi, what is the discipline prescribed? Karma Yoga. For Antahkarana Naishchalyam, for mental stability, steadiness, the discipline prescribed is Upasana, meditation. Again, meditation means meditation on what? Ishvara, Bhagavan. So in order just to place one's attention in Bhagavan, it's not this simply sitting and closing your eyes alone. In fact, all this, the expression of one's devotion to Bhagavan in the form of performing puja, performing rituals, chanting shlokas, mantras, singing praise of Bhagavan, doing kirtanams, all different activities through which we express a devotion towards Bhagavan. That is how we are helped to place the mind in Bhagavan. Upasanam does not mean simply, even though the word upasanam is meditation, meditation means placing attention of the mind in Bhagavan. How do you place? When you're performing a puja, though it involves physical oral activity, still attention is placed in Bhagavan. In chanting, in reciting, is oral activity, but still attention is placed in Bhagavan. Isn't it? And you see, decorate the form, which symbol of Bhagavan, which symbolizes Bhagavan, attention is placed in Bhagavan. So you are helped. So Saguna Upasana means by performing pujas, even during performing rituals, or is chanting, reciting, okay? Or is simply even trying to pay attention of Bhagavan in the given form of Bhagavan, which is a symbol of Ishvara. That's all. One can really be meditative. So this upasanam helps you to take the attention away from other objects and place in something which symbolizes Bhagavan. Even though Bhagavan's swarupam you do not know, still in worshipping, in praying, in singing in praise of Bhagavan, you place the attention, it becomes upasana. So upasana is a discipline recommended by the Shastram to steady the unsteady, restless, agitated mind. So once this mental purification, mental steadiness is taken care of, by following strictly these two disciplines, Karma Yoga and upasana, meditation, in terms of being devoted to Bhagavan, being worshipful of Bhagavan, being prayerful to Bhagavan, being meditative upon Ishvara, these two problems can be taken care of. That is how mind can become relatively pure and steady. Then, when a person is given to the discipline of Jnana Yoga, with adequate mental preparation, the Shravanam becomes effective, Mananam becomes effective, then Nidhyasanam will be possible. Then it will help a person really discover, understand, ascertain the vision of the truth, obtaining as one's own self. In discovering which, the person's perspective will change, and the perspective changes without being driven away, samsara by itself dissolves. This is the order, isn't it? Therefore, Shastram prescribes all these things. That is why in devotion, I'll come to the point second, this discipline called upasana. Upasana implies devotion towards the Lord. Upasana, when it means meditation, it implies what? Being devoted to the Ishvara, this Lord. So there, in devotion includes what? Devotion includes mythology. Devotion implies religious culture. Devotion implies religious customs, religious disciplines. So, this religion, when you say religion itself, implies what? Religious customs, religious disciplines, religious reforms, all this. So, if the forms are not understood, even mythological descriptions, descriptions are involved in religion. So they must be understood in the light of mythological descriptions, in terms of religious disciplines, religious forms, etc., should be validated, understood in the light of the Shastra teaching. Without understanding the mythological descriptions, if we simply follow them or accept them, it becomes mere superstitious belief. As I said, it will not contribute for the personality development, not contribute for what? The transformation on the part of an individual. It has to bring about a change. Oh, every day this person is going to temple, he is worshipping, he is praying, he is sitting from morning till evening, he is doing all these things. Still, the person gets very angry, he wounds the person, he is meditating from morning till evening, but still he can't handle certain things. These things, the problems are there. Why? Because they are understood. This is not understood in the light of the teaching, validated. Things have to be validated in the light of the teaching. But without validating, you simply follow them means it doesn't bring out any transformation. So that's also very important. Then, so Shankar Bhagavatpada, what he does, he really wants us to understand that symbolic, how this entirety of the Indian Hindu mythological literature has its basis in the principle of symbolism. That is how mythological literature itself has been brought into existence, based on the principle of symbolism. Therefore, understanding symbolism in the light of the teaching, validating is very important. Because what happened, Mahatmas, great people, great sages, they keep subtle facts, subtle things, they hide, they shroud the subtle facts where in the language of, in the symbolic, in the symbolism. In fact, they love it. For them, it's a joy. Let me give an example. Suppose we say solar eclipse. What is solar eclipse? There's a particular day, part of the sunlight becomes covered. Part of sunlight becomes covered by the shadow. That's all, isn't it? Eclipse. But how do they say? Serpent has engulfed the part of the sun. The sun has been engulfed. No? Rahu Grastha. Rahuna Grastha Suryaha. Divakaraha. The sun has been engulfed. Half of the sun has gone to the mouth of the snake. So only half is covered. This is symbolic, isn't it? If we don't understand this, what will happen? It's like a cock and bull story, isn't it? And so Ravana has 10 headed Ravana. Ravana is portrayed in mythology as what? As the one Dashadanaha, ten-headed. What does it stand for? It's a bloated ahankara. Not that he has one head. One head has one ahankara, isn't it? A huge bloated ahankara. So say that he has ten-headed. Like this, what I'm saying, the mythological literature having its basis in the principle of symbolism should be understood in the light of the teaching, so that everything must be validated. Why we have temple? Why we go around the temple? Why do we keep the kumkum on the forehead? Why do we bow to them? Why do we do prostration? What does it have? We fall flat. Women do panchanga namaskara. Men do sashtanga namaskara. Isn't it? What does it mean? So everything must be validated in the light of the teaching, so that it is not something meaningless. Only then, with understanding, if we do it, it's not mechanical. It should not be mechanical. No, most of the time it's only mechanical. We go to temple, fall flat, we come back. But is there a bhava? Genuinely, when you fall flat, what should be the bhava? This whole body, mind, and complex is yours. And whatever is done with the help of this body, mind, complex, oh Lord, please bless with all knowledge and clarity and strength that see that what is done with the help of this body, mind, and complex is not against dharma. Like that. So, all these religious customs and disciplines must be validated right off the teaching. Only then they can be transformative. Otherwise, they won't be transformative. It becomes a failure. So, here in Kashi Panchakam, Shankara Bhagavatpada teaches something very profound and explaining this Kashi Yatra. What is Kashi Yatra? For all Hindus, for the entirety of the world of Hindus, going to Kashi, having Vishwanatha Swami Darshanam is a lifetime goal in life. I must go before I fall, you know. People know anyway, one day I'll die. Before, especially people older they grow, older they become, and they have this wish. Somehow, I don't have any wish for me. I don't know this year. At least once I want to go to Kashi. You must have heard people say, isn't it? Kashi Yatra. So what is it? It's a religious thing, isn't it? What is there in going to Kashi? What exactly is meant by going to Kashi and having the darshan of Vishwanatha Swami? Vishalakshi Devi Sameta Vishwanatha Swami. What does it mean? So he wants to explain in this Kashi Panchakam, but he presents a profound teaching meant for contemplation. Okay. Is it clear? I'm going to the first verse. Please make, you can write the first verse like we did. We'll get it by 10 o'clock, we'll get the paper. Mano nivritti. If you tell this verse first, mano nivrittihi, first word, mano nivrittihi, parama upashantihi, paramopashantihi. Mano nivrittihi, word one. Second word, paramopashantihi. Mano nivrittihi, paramopashantihi, sa, tirthavariya. Sa tirthavariya manikarnika cha. I'm saying slowly for sake of those who want to write. Okay. Mano nivrittihi. Better write because I didn't ask for English translation because they're only going to give you Sanskrit, the printout. Nanchana. Okay. Mano nivrittihi. She says, I've sent it already. Is it Sanskritam or English? Okay. Mano nivrittihi paramopashantihi. Got it? Sa tirthavariya manikarnikacha jnana pravaha vimala adiganga. Jnana pravaha vimala adiganga सा काशिका अहम निज बोध रूपा, सा काशिका अहम निज बोध रूपा, दैट्स ऑल. सी एवरी एवरी वर्स दिस पंचकम, अ स्मॉल लुक ऑफ फाइव वर्सेस. नो इन ईच वर्सेस ईच वर्स एंड्स विद दिस वर्ड अहम निज बोध रूपा. इन ईच वर्स द लास्ट सेंटेंस इज व्हाट, लास्ट वर्ड इज व्हाट, लास्ट सेंटेंस इज अहम निज बोध रूपा. That is repeated in all the verses. Aham. At least you cannot go from this place without knowing the meaning of the word aham, isn't it? Aham means I. You know that. Who I am here? Aham nija bodha rupa. The word nija means one's own, my own. And bodha means knowledge, awareness, consciousness. Bodha means pure awareness, pure consciousness, or pure knowledge. Rupa means the form. So, yasyaha, see, yasyaha mama, okay? Yasya mama or yasyaha mama, bodha nijarupam, nijam rupam, yasyaha mama, kashyaha mama, nijam rupam bodha. I for whom, who am of the, my own form of the nature of awareness. Is the literal meaning. Okay. Bodha nijam rupam yasyaha sa nijabodha rupa. Okay. मनो निवृत्ति परमोपशांति, मनो निवृत्ति परमोपशांति, सातीर्थवरिया मणिकर्णिका च, सातीर्थवरिया मणिकर्णिका च, मनो निवृत्ति परमोपशांति, मनो निवृत्ति परमोपशांति, मनोनिवृत्तिः परमोपशान्तिः, मनोनिवृत्तिः परमोपशान्तिः, सा तीर्थवर्या मणिकर्णिका च, सा तीर्थवर्या मणिकर्णिका च, ज्ञानप्रवाह विमलादिगङ्गा, ज्ञानप्रवाह विमलादिगङ्गा, सा काशिकाहं निजबोधरूपा, काशिकाहं निजबोधरूपा, मनोनिवृत्तिः परमोपशान्तिः, मनोनिवृत्तिः परमोपशान्तिः, सा तीर्थवर्या मणिकर्णिका च, तीर्थवर्या मणिकर्णिका च, ज्ञान प्रवाह विमलादि गंगा, प्रवाह विमलादि गंगा, साकाशिकाहं निजबोधरूपा, साकाशिकाहं निजबोधरूपा. ओके, सो हियर अहम निजबोधरूपा. अहम काशिका, सा काशिका, अहम सा काशिका, सा काशिका. सी काशिका इज नथिंग बट द वर्ड काशी. लेट मी मेक इट, काशी इज द वर्ड विच आर वेरी फेमिलियर विद द वर्ड, इज इट, काशी. सा काशी अहम मीन व्हाट, दैट काशी, काशी अलोन इज सेड टू बी काशिका. दिस का, addition of this affix ka does not change the meaning. Kashi is equal to kashika. Like you say balaha, balaha becomes what, balakaha, balika, bala becomes balika, like that, isn't it? So here also Kashi is equal to Kashika, same meaning. Doesn't change the meaning. Meaning is the same. Sa Kashi Aham. Aham Sa Kashi. I am that Kashi. Who am I? Am that Kashi. And as they explained the word today, okay? Kashi has been derived from the root Kash. And what is the verb? Kashate. So Kashate shines. Kash to shine the root. And Kashi is adjective. That which shines. That which shines is Kashi. So that which shines by itself. So that which is self-effulgent, self-luminous, self-radiant. That which is self-evident. That which shines by itself is what? Kashi. And the Kashi is it. So Kashate iti Kashi, one meaning. Why it's called Kashi? Because it shines. Kashate iti Kashi. So Kashaha yasya asti saka. Yasyaha asti sakashi. Kashaha means light. Kashaha yasya asti sakashi. Yasyaha asti sakashi. That which has the effulgence is Kashi. Kashate iti Kashi. Kashaha yasyaha asti sakashi. Okay. So Kashi is Kashika. So sa kashika aham. I am that, okay, Kashika. I am that city known as Kashi. I am that city known as Kashi. I am that city no Kashi. What a city? That city, Kashi city, symbolizes what? The self-effulgent consciousness. The whole city itself symbolizes what? The consciousness, pure awareness. Sa Kashika aham. So I am the city of Kashi. Nijabodha Rupa. And what the city of Kashi is not a city which you say is known as Banaras. Go all the way from here to see the place. Actually, that city actually stands for, symbolizes what? Symbol of Nijabodha Rupa. Nijabodha Rupa means I am that city of Kashi who am of my own form of pure awareness. I am that Kashi. I am that city of Kashi who am of my own form of the nature of pure awareness. Understand now? Sa Kashika Nijabodha Rupa Sa Kashika Aham. Okay. Now, Mano Nivruttihi. Mano Nivruttihi. See, Mano Nivruttihi means what? The resolution of the mind. Resolution of the mind, what? Now, quietening of the mind. Completely rest. I am that city of Kashi who am of my own, who am of my own form of consciousness, awareness, in which the mind is totally, there's total resolution of the mind. You know, what does it mean? Mind. I'm free from that mind. That's the meaning. Mano Nivruttihi. Parama Upashantihi. Parama Upashantihi. Mano Nivruttihi. Parama Upashantihi. See, Shantihi, Shantihi means peace. Upashanti also means peace. We have peace. Every day when you fall asleep, you have peace. What is Upashanti? What is peace? Being free from threefold tapas. What is peace? What is being peaceful? Peace means being peaceful. Being peaceful, being free from threefold tapas. What are threefold tapas? Adhyatmika tapaha, Adi Daivikata, Adi Bhautika tapaha, Adi Daivika tapaha. If these three tapas are not there, then what is there is peace. So here, the Swarupa of the Atma is absolutely always free from the threefold tapas. Atma has, the Atma, the consciousness implied with the term Atma, the Nijabodha Rupa. No? The consciousness has no afflictions. Consciousness has no Adhyatmika Tapa. Consciousness has no Adi Bhautika Tapa. Consciousness has no Adi Daivika Tapa also. It's free from all these tapas. So, what he says, Parama Upashantihi, Parama means exalted absolute. So, absolute peace. So, I am that city of Kashi, who am of my own form of the pure awareness, who am ever of the nature of absolute peace, free from threefold tapas, threefold afflictions. Since, so I told you many times in the class, tapaha means heat, tapaha also means fire. What does the fire do? Fire can scorch, but even heat can scorch. Fire or heat can scorch. Therefore, emotional pain also is capable of scorching, burning the mind. That's why pain is implied with them, fire and heat. So pain caused by obstacles. Definitely there will always be pain. Pain caused by obstacles. In the form of one's own physical illness, one's own emotional illness. The obstacle for which the source is one's own self, it is called what? Adhyatmika tapa. The pain caused by obstacles for which the source is one's own self is called Adhyatmika tapaha. I cannot be pain free. Like I cannot be free from pain, suffering, if I am not well, physically well, not physically, I mean, if a body is not well, my own body is sick, my own mind is disturbed, then there can't be peace. Therefore, Adhyatmika tapaha. Katicha. Then, Adi Bhautika tapaha. So, pain, the scorching pain, burning pain caused by the obstacles for which the source is anything and everything other than myself, my own body, mind, is complex, is what Adi Bhautika tapaha. So anything around me, other than me, if anything other than me becomes a source of obstacle which causes pain, that is said to be Adi Bhautika tapaha. What is Adi Daivika tapaha? Is burning, scorching pain, affliction caused by the natural crisis, natural calamities, over which I had no control. Like some big, huge tempest happens, or earthquake happens, and suddenly so much, so many people die. It's pain, isn't it? So, there's no third source of obstacle. There are three sources of obstacles. My own body, mind, and complex can be a source of obstacles, which can cause pain. Or anything and anybody other than my own body, mind, and complex, people around me, people associated with me, or things around me, can be sources of obstacles. So this pain caused by the obstacles arising from anything and everything other than me is said to be what? Adi Bhautika tapaha. And Adi Daivika tapaha अनकंट्रोलेबल पेन कॉस्ड बाय द नेचुरल कैलामिटीज इज आदि दैविक तापः. सो बीइंग फ्री फ्रॉम द पेन अफ्लिक्शन कॉस्ड बाय ऑब्स्टिकल्स पर विद थ्री डिफरेंट सोर्सेस arising from three different sources is what now? Shanti. That is what you speak. Being free from those afflictions is Shanti. Absolutely. So, mind cannot escape. Mind is subject to these threefold afflictions. Body subject to some afflictions. Mind, if at all there is a tapa, the pain, who be subject to this pain? It is the mind which is subject to this pain caused by the obstacles arising from three different sources. Whereas what about the consciousness? Consciousness, the pure awareness, is absolutely free from all these afflictions. Therefore, the Aham Kashika, I am that city of Kashi, who am ever of my own form of awareness, who am ever of the nature of absolute peace, free from all these afflictions. We can't say these tapas are not there at all. We can't say that. They are there, but they are not there for me. That is what the objectivity has to come, isn't it? So it is said here, mano nivrittihi paramopashantihi parama upashantihi. We do have shanti. We are free from this pain, affliction caused by obstacles arising from three different sources. Myself, external world, and natural calamities. When? In sleep. You fall asleep in deep sleep state, at least temporarily. You sleep for 5 hours, 6 hours, or 8 hours in deep sleep state. You are free from this adhyatmika, adhibhautika, adhi daivika tapas. You are free from pain. But still, unfortunately, this sukham is not there permanently. You are woken up as part of the karma. Isn't it? So again, the afflictions come back. But here, these afflictions cannot touch, do not reach where? The pure awareness. The abstract, formless pure awareness is something which is in which all these afflictions are possible, which gives existence to these power, afflictions. But awareness by itself is free from these afflictions, free from these tapas. Therefore, parama upashanti, so exalted peace, absolute peace, I who am ever of the nature of absolute peace. Parama upashanti. So we are not trying to undo, get rid of the pain. Okay? Leave the pain there, you become objective towards the pain. Just that's what is taught here. It is not said that you immediately the pain will go away. No. Let the pain be there. Pain will be there, but you become objective towards the pain, so you are free from the pain. So I am free from the pain. I am ever of the nature of absolute peace. Where, okay, even the resolved mind, resolution of the mind, I am the source of the resolution of the mind. Mano nivrittihi, parama upashanti. Got it? मनोनिवृत्ति परमोपशांति देन सा तीर्थवर्या मणिकर्णिका च एंड व्हाट इज द मणिकर्णिका सो आई एम काशी मायसेल्फ यू नाउ शंकराचार्य एक्सप्लेन्स ओके डोंट गो एंड सर्च फॉर काशी एनीवेयर एल्स डोंट कैनॉट ट्राई टू बुक योर टिकेट्स टू गो टू काशी यू आर काशी योर सेल्फ. Understand, I am Kashika. I am that city of Kashi who am ever of my own form of pure awareness, where is total resolution of the mind, and which is ever of the nature of, who am ever of the nature of absolute peace. Now he says, what would Manikarnika got in Kashi? Why should the bodies be cremated only there, Manikarnika Kashi? Manikarnika got in that Kashi. What is the significance of it? He says, தீர்த்தவரியா மணிகர்ணிகா. தீர்த்தம் மீன்ஸ் த பியூரிஃபை, ஹோலி. தீர்த்தவரியா மீன்ஸ் வாட்? தி ஹோலியஸ்ட் ஆர் தி மோஸ்ட் பியூரிஃபைங். தீர்த்தவரியா மணிகர்ணிகா, மணிகர்ணிகா காட் இஸ் தி மோஸ்ட் பியூரிஃபைங் காட், இஸ் revered as but most purifying god, because don't think if you go to Manikarnika god the body gets cremated there it will purify you. No, that's not the idea. Okay, because somehow why the, one day we should ask question like this: why should we Manikarnika, why should we go to Manikarnika, why should the bodies be taken to Manikarnika god to cremate? What is special about it? What is holy about it? One day we should ask and then you will get an answer. If you understand the meaning, it is very beautiful. If you don't understand the meaning, it's a superstitious belief. If we cremate the body here, it won't get burnt or what? Why should we take it all the way to Manikarnika Ghat? So that is why we have created this setup, isn't it? One day one has to ask. You know, we put kept Swapuji Swamiji's Murti here. Murti, why should you keep a Murti? Swamiji is now a Bhagavan, Ishwara. Do you need his Murti? No. Sometime later on, maybe another half to 100, 200 years, somebody may come to this place. He'll ask, what is this murti? Whose murti is this? Why should we keep it here? And he will say what? Once upon a time, there was a Swami called Dayananda Saraswati and he was teaching this. This is what he was teaching. The teaching will be there, isn't it? The why we need, that is why in India, can you believe? That is why wherever you go, the place should remind you of your own Swarupam. The place should remind you of what the purpose of your life. That's why this is called spiritual land, isn't it? Wherever you go, it's Punya Bhumi. It's not Karma Bhumi. Wherever you go, Kashi, 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 Kashi. People know the meaning or not. Every Hindu's mouth will say what? Kashi, Kashi, Kashi. One day I will understand the meaning of this verse, isn't it? Because it's like saying, whether you reach the pinnacle of peak of the mountain Himalayas or not, at least one day, first step you have to keep place, isn't it? Listen, hearing the name of Kashi and wanting to go to the city of Kashi finally should culminate in the understanding of, you know, what Kashi stands for. That is why Kashi Panchakam. Understand now? So he says, similarly, Manikarnika God, Tirthavariya. Tirtha means what? It's a purifying God. Manikarnika. Manikarnika is just the name. Why Manikarnika is the name? Manikarnika is the name of that God, his holy God, and Tirthavarya is the holiest of the gods. Most purifying the God is Manikarnika. Why it's most purifying? Because nothing in the world can purify unless and until. Okay, nothing can purify. Because how can you, who are already pure, become purified? The impure can become purified, isn't it? The impure alone can be purified. Already the purest cannot be purified, isn't it? That which is ever of the nature of purity cannot be purified. The impure thing can be purified. So remember, I used to give these two examples. The refinement also. Refinement is possible of something which is unrefined. Purification is possible of something which is impure. Reality here, I am the city of Kashi, who am ever of my own form of awareness. Consciousness means consciousness ever of the nature of purity. It cannot become pure. It is free from all afflictions. It is free from all punya papas. It is free from all the impurity, mental impurities. Consciousness is free. It's ever of the nature of purity. Nothing can cause any, nothing can taint it, isn't it? Therefore, it is said, this in negation, that's why you don't need to become impure, means negation of the body identity. If identity with the body, mind, and complex becomes removed, negated, you don't become pure. You claim, you take ownership of purity, which is already there as your own nature. Imagine if you really had to become pure, it will take ages. It's not possible at all. Isn't it? So here Manikarnika got Sa Manikarnika, Tirthavarya Manikarnika cha. The Manikarnika is also the most purifying. It is God because it symbolizes, it stands for the negation of, resolution of identity, identification with the body, mind, sense complex. Understand? So as they said, the body identity, having the identity with the body, mind, sense complex means having bloated ahankara. Strong erroneous notion about the self. What is ahankara? Entertaining a very strong erroneous notion about one's own self is ahankara. The stronger the identity with the body, mind, sense complex, bloated is your ahankara, stronger is your ahankara. So this ahankara has to be resolved. Means what? The erroneous notion you have about yourself must be resolved, corrected. So if the erroneous notion has been resolved, means how can you give up ahankara? The people say give up ahankara, give up ahankara. You are not giving up ahankara, you are not holding on to ahankara. This erroneous notion you have about yourself should be resolved, corrected, only by resolving the identity you have with body, mind, sense complex, anatma. So this ahankara, this body identity with the body, mind, sense complex, specifically the body, then also the mind also. So this wrong, this identity one has, this body, mind, sense complex, is in three forms. I am the body, mind, sense complex is one type of identity. Then my body, mind, sense complex is like another type of body, mind, identity, wrong identity. And then everything I want for me, that I want that for me, I want this for me, we say there's another type of identity, erroneous, wrong identity one has with the body, mind, sense complex. So aham, we say, aham dehaha, mama dehaha, mahyam avashyakam. Aham dehaha, mama dehaha, mahyam avashyakam. Isn't it? This is how the identity with anatma, body, mind, sense complex, which is of three types, is in these forms. As I am the body, as my body, and this is what all this is wanted for me. So Shastram says, and having this wrong identity one has with the body, mind, sense complex, resolved itself is what? Having one's body cremated in, is it? Cremated in Manikarnika God. Then what happens? I do not become pure. I just claim, I take ownership of purity, which is already there as my own nature. Purity, being pure is my nature. The Shastram does not really undo anything here. Shastram helps you how to be objective, how to become objective towards things. Okay, so he says, Sa Tirthavarya Manikarnika cha. It may sound, oh, what is this? What does it say? Sa Tirthavarya Manikarnika cha. Okay. So I am that Kashi city. I'm the city of Kashi, who am ever of my own form of awareness. Having this what? Manikarnika God, which is ever free from what? The body, mind, sense complex. You are free from this wrong identity. Consciousness does not have any identity. You know that? Does consciousness have any identity? Isn't it? It's in the form of notion, it's in the mind. Got it? It's very nice. And here you have to remember, that is why getting rid of identity with the body, mind, and complex is not that easy. How much ever Shravanam is done, when you are listening, everything looks sounds very, very clear. Yes, yes. Now listening, Dripta Shiveka Prakriya is used, Avastatra Prakriya is used, very clear. In the class, it is very, very clear. Yes, body is object of knowledge, mind is object of knowledge, all emotions are objects of knowledge. I know, I am the knower, I am different from the known. Everything becomes clear. And I, the knower, I am consciousness. Everything becomes very clear. Does it help? It should help. Why? This getting rid of identity is not that easy. That doesn't mean we should not listen to this, okay? We must be listening continuously. How many times you listen also, it is not that easy to get rid of the identity with the body, mind, sense complex. It takes ages. It needs a lot of samskara, okay? The samskara is a very important word for us. Okay, one has to really have the refinement. Repeated listening will help you understand, assimilate this fact. Therefore, in order to get rid of this wrong identity with anatma, body, mind, and complex in threefold forms, Shastra prescribes threefold disciplines. I told you yesterday also. So living a life of karma yoga will help me resolve the identity with anatma, body, mind, and complex in terms of everything is wanted for me. I want that, I want this. Will resolve. Then the upasanam, being worshipful of Ishvara all the time, being prayerful to Ishvara, and being meditative of Ishvara, being worshipful, being prayerful, and being meditative of Ishvara always will help me resolve this problem of sense of possession, sense of belonging as mine. Because then you will say, it is not for me, it's everything, it's for the whole world, it's for Ishvara. Upasana will help. Then jnanam, this discipline of jnana yoga will help gradually shravanam, mananam, vidhyasanam. These three steps involved in jnana yoga will help you resolve the problem of ahankara, the erroneous identity, body identity, in terms of I am the body. Got it now? Okay. Then, jnana pravaha vimaladi ganga. Jnana pravaha adi ganga. Vimala adi ganga. See, vimala means the pure, blemish-free, eternal flow of knowledge, Vedic wisdom. Jnana pravaha means what? The flow of wisdom. Vedic wisdom. Flow of Vedic knowledge. The pure, blemish-free flow of Vedic wisdom is symbolized by what? This Adi Ganga. So I am Adi Ganga. In fact, it's one meaning. And where does this Vedic wisdom really begin to flow? Where does it originate from? What is the source of this Vedic wisdom? What is the source of knowledge? Any knowledge for that matter. The only source of all knowledge, even Veda, or any knowledge is what? Awareness only. It is the pure consciousness, pure awareness, which is the only source of any knowledge, whether it's Vedic knowledge or mundane knowledge. Any knowledge is from the source of all knowledge is the truth. For Adi Ganga, the first and the foremost source of all knowledge. Even the Vedic wisdom, which has been flowing through the unbroken lineage of teachers. So Ganga symbolizes this eternal flow of Vedic wisdom, which has been flowing through the unbroken lineage of Guru Parampara, lineage of teachers. So Jnanaprava, Vimala Jnanapravaha Adi Ganga, he says that if this is what Ganga is, this is what Manikarnika is, this is what this resolution of the mind is, this is what the absolute peace is. Now he says what? Sa Kashika Aham Nijabodha Rupa. And one more meaning you have to understand here. The Ganga I told you yesterday, one meaning is what? The eternal flow, perennially eternal flow of Vedic wisdom. The perennially eternal flow of Vedic wisdom, which has been flowing through the unbroken lineage of teachers, I said. One more thing, that's pure awareness, isn't it? The perennial flow of manifestations of consciousness also. Isn't it? From beginninglessly, endlessly, there is constantly, perennially, this manifestations of consciousness, isn't it? Every time there's manifestation of consciousness, again it's resolution of consciousness. Resolution. Manifestation, the power of reality becomes manifest, again power of reality becomes unmanifest. Power of reality becomes manifest, power of reality becomes unmanifest. This has been happening. When did first time power of reality become manifest? From beginningless step. Understand? That's why perennial manifestations of, okay, this Ganga also symbolizes the perennial manifestations of consciousness. Understand? So this consciousness becomes manifest, becomes again unmanifest, not conscious. The power of reality becomes manifest, again becomes unmanifest. And the source of the power is what? The abstract formless reality, and which is ever of the nature of unchanging, which is ever is of unchanging consciousness. The being conscious, being aware, the awareness does not undergo any change. So without undergoing any changes, retaining its nature of being conscious, reality has been there and manifesting its power eternally. Is it clear? So the perennial manifestations of consciousness is also symbolized by what? Ganga.
What is the
meaning of the
Adi?
Adi means, Adi Ganga means the beginningless, okay, the beginningless reality. The first, the foremost. Adi means first, the foremost. Adi Ganga. Adi Ganga means the beginningless source of manifestations of consciousness. See, consciousness doesn't become. There's a perennial manifestation of consciousness, isn't it? Yeah, knowledge also, I'm talking about when you say consciousness, even the, every time Jagat comes into manifestation, the universe shines. Once you wake up, the universe is there. You fall asleep, universe disappears. Isn't it? Which means the source of manifestation is there always, changelessly. The source of manifestation, the source of the power of manifestation is always there, beginninglessly, endlessly, changelessly. It's abstract and formless. It is you. That is what is you. And that's inseparable. Why does that inexplicable subtle reality, how does it become manifest? Isn't it? You see, that knowing power becoming manifest is known. The knowing power becoming unmanifest also is known. When the knowing power becomes manifest, it is there as knowledge. The knowing power becomes unmanifest, it is there as ignorance. Jnana Shakti, the power of knowing, when it becomes manifest is jnanam. The power of knowing becomes unmanifest is ignorance. Only power has two names. Please understand. The only Shakti. What is Shakti? Inexplicable again. Anirvachaniya. This power of knowing manifest is jnanam. Unmanifest is ajnanam. But there's a source of the power. The source of the power, how do you say that source of the power is different, distinct from the known power? Because source of the power is the knower of the power. The knower of ignorance, so that which obtains as the knower of the ignorance, know as the knower of the knowledge is distinct from the known ignorance and knowledge. Therefore, we say what? The knowing power manifest is jnanam. Unmanifest is ajnanam, and the knower of the known ignorance and knowledge is the knower of this power. It knows what? It knows its own power. The knower knows one's own power, its own power. There's no distance. Got it? That's why we say it's very, very subtle here, isn't it? Let me give you the example. In deep sleep state, when you do not know your own existence, there is ignorance of your existence. Isn't it? There's ignorance of your existence. Ignorance of your being. And in waking state is that when there is knowledge of your existence in terms of I am. Therefore, this your knowledge of existence in terms of I am being present in the waking state is known. The knowledge of existence being not there in deep sleep state also is known. So, to ignorance is known, knowledge also is known. Is it known or not? This class, you have to say now itself. Is it known or not? Ignorance is known, knowledge also is known. The knower of knowledge and ignorance is distinct from the known knowledge and ignorance. That knower you are. That knower is who? That knower is abstract, formless reality, which is ever of nature of pure awareness. It is that knower, that abstract reality having the status of being the knower is Kashika. Got it now? Therefore, Vimala Adi Ganga means this Ganga flowing from Ganga. When we go to all the way to Ganga, we want to go Gangotri, go to the place called Gangotri to see the called Gomukh. They say, oh, this is where Ganga begins. This is the place from where Ganga begins flowing. Really speaking, some point that's up. Exactly, we can never trace the beginning point of the river, any river. That's why it always said, never ever ask the source of Rishi Moolam and Nadi Moolam. See, there are many streams all over Himalayas. So many tiny streams. From everywhere the water flows. And they all get together. And from one point starts flowing. Exactly where the river begins. Can you make out? Some point you see, we can never make out from what is the first source of, first origin of river. However, I don't know whether in any other culture they found it, understood this. You can never understand, you can never arrive at actually the first source of the origination of the river. Somewhere you see, people go all the way, Ganga is flowing in Haridwar, going in Delhi, Calcutta, it flows everywhere. Okay, from where? We'll go to North India or Himalayas. From where it's been flowing. And go to Badrinath, go to Kedarnath. You can see Ganga everywhere. And people go to Gangotri. They say this is the first, this is where Gomukh. This is where Ganga is, begins to flow from this place. Even before that, where has it come from? Ever thought about it? We can never trace the first source of the river. That's why Rishi Molam also. Understand where exactly, what is the source of the knowledge? Where does the knowledge rise from? Where does knowledge exist? Where does knowledge resolve? What is this knowledge? The knowledge. I can say knowledge of anything and everything pertaining to anything and everything in the world can be reduced to one piece of knowledge. Knowledge of the existence of the world. Is it clear what I'm saying? Knowledge of the existence of the world. The world exists. If you know the world exists means, then what are all the things which exist in this world and how they exist? What is its source? And all detailed knowledge of everything in this universe, leave alone all those knowledge. First of all, knowledge of the existence of the world. See, any discovery, any amount of knowledge of anything in this world is possible only if you know the world exists, isn't it? If you do not even know the world exists, how can you discover what is in this world? Any amount of knowledge pertaining to anything in the world is possible only, first of all, if you know the world exists. Isn't it? The knowledge of the existence of the world must be there. The knowledge of the existence of the world is possible only if there is, first of all, you know your own existence. That is why for all Vedanta students, the most important thing is what? Knowledge of existence of one's own self. I am. If you do not know you are, where is the question of we are knowing the existence of the world? That is why the knowledge of existence of one's own self in terms of I am is the first and the foremost of manifestations. Aham. Aham asmi. I am. This knowledge first must rise first. When this knowledge is not there, is there consciousness or not? Is there awareness? The source of manifestation is there or not? Tell me. This is Kashi. This Kashi Panchakam is not something which presents all sentence of the sentence. Something is for discussion like this, for understanding. The knowledge of self-existence in terms of I am, which I seem of a thought, okay, comes and goes. Do you agree with this? Even this knowledge of self-existence is there, only we call it a waking state. If this knowledge of self-existence in terms of I am is not there, it doesn't rise, then you are asleep. If you are there not knowing your own existence, you are asleep. Consciousness is as though asleep. If you wake up, if you know you are, as though consciousness is waking up. Consciousness does not wake up, does not sleep. Understand? The power of knowing, jnana shakti, the power of knowing, the knowing power. Knowing power belongs to whom? Knowing power is where? This knowing power is there always, beginninglessly, anadi shakti. Knowing power is the shakti, subtlest power, primordial power. Always said to be prakriti, is it? That knowing power is always there, beginninglessly, indestructibly. Indestructible power is always there. And what is source of the power? Doesn't exist outside of this abstract formless reality. That's why you say reality and power of reality. They're not two. It's like fire with its burning power. It's like sun with its illumining power. Inseparable. It's very subtle. That's why it's inexplicable. It is this power. It's always there. This power is of the nature of becoming manifest, be remaining unmanifest. Becoming manifest and remaining unmanifest. Becoming manifest and remaining unmanifest. Indestructible power. Beginningless power, endless power. It is of the nature of becoming manifest, becoming and remaining unmanifest. Becoming manifest, remaining unmanifest. First, when the power becomes manifest, what is the first and foremost of the manifestations? I am. What is I am? Knowledge of existence of the self. That should become first. Then simultaneously, what is possible? Knowledge of the existence of the world. There can never be the knowledge of the existence of the world without the knowledge of the existence of the self. Which knowledge should rise first? Even before the rising of the knowledge of the existence of the self, already what is there is what? Aham, Asmi. Even this knowledge also remains without. There's a time, there's ignorance of the existence of the self. Therefore, the ignorance is known. Knowledge also is known, which means the knower of knowledge and ignorance is the knower of its own power. Understand now? The knower knows its own power in the form of ignorance and knowledge. The knowledge is power, manifest is knowledge, power unmanifest is ignorance. That's why ignorance is not absence of knowledge. Ignorance is not absence of knowledge. Ignorance is that which is opposed to knowledge. We never say, for us, there's no absolute, there's no ignorance. You know that? Absolutely, in Vedic vision, there's no such thing called ignorance at all. Absolutely. That's why, if consciousness, if this abstract formless reality here symbolized by this Kashika, the Kashi city, which is ever of the nature of awareness, consciousness, always there, being eternally there, timelessly it is there, means the manifestation also must be there, what now? Perennially happening, isn't it? This perennially, the perennial manifestations of consciousness alone is symbolized by Ganga. Understand now? That's why Ganga is the holiest river. That's why we never put a foot in the Ganga. Go near the river, bend down, bow to the Ganga river, take water, sprinkle on your head first, then you put your leg and go and have dip. Solid emotional, isn't it? What is the after all water? No, great reverence. How much reverence you have for Veda? How much reverence you have for Bhagavan? How much reverence you have for the reality, the truth? Because it symbolizes that truth, symbolizes that reality, symbolizes Ishvara, the source of all knowledge. That is why we never put a foot first into the Ganga. Understand? See, it teaches both. It makes you understand the truth. It makes you also see the symbolism involved in it. Jnana Pravaha Vimaladi Ganga. Okay. Now he says what? Sa Kashika Aham Nijabodha Rupa. So what is the teaching from here? It's very important for us to be objective towards our body, mind, sense, complex. Our own mind, specifically mind. How can I be objective towards my own mind? Isn't it? How can I be objective towards my own mind. If the identity is with the mind, then object of knowledge becomes real. The identity with the mind, the identity is not with the mind, objective towards the mind, the object being mithya becomes clear. The external world of objects will be real if you have identity with your mind. If, when you say you, if the I am this knowledge, the I sense is identified with the mind, then the object of knowledge becomes real. The world of objects becomes real in your perception. It's very real. Once the world of objects becomes very real, then what happens? Attention is paid to that object. Attention is paid. Importance is given. Then time becomes invested. Energy becomes invested in the object. Interest becomes invested in the object. Time, energy, interest becomes invested in the object. Once the object is real in your perception, object becomes real in your perception when I sense is identified with the mind. I sense must be cognitively distinguished from the mind and see the source of the I sense. Where does this knowledge I am rise from? Where does it exist? Where does it resolve? It is resolved, it's a deep sleep state. It rises, it's a waking state of the mind, isn't it? It is not there, where does it resolve? So what is that which is there when the I sense is not there? The knower. The knower of the absence. The knower of the ignorance. The knower of the knowledge is what is there when the I sense is not there. The, what is there must be the what? The source of the knowledge. And what is that which is there? Only know there's knower. And that knower is formless, abstract reality, which is implied by the term pure knowledge or pure consciousness, pure awareness in terms of its nature of knowing. Does it make sense now? Is it clear? This work is for you to just to be repeatedly seeing the fact. Shankara Bhagavatpada wants us to see the fact here. So what should I do now? When, as much as possible, instead of identifying the I sense with the I, the mind, withdraw one's own self from the cognitively, intellectually withdraw this oneself from the mind, and one must watch the mind, observe the mind. If we see the mind, mind becomes quiet. Being objective towards the mind, isn't it? Cognitively, intellectually, withdrawing oneself from the mind, watching the mind, observing the mind means quieting the mind. This repeatedly trying to do this is what? Yoga. It's also yoga. So I am the seer, knower, who am free from this known ignorance and knowledge. Means I am, so this is, understanding must be there. Repeatedly, when you see, if it is practiced, you can see how the object is not real. In spite of seeing the object, you can say this object is not real. When you see the ocean, when you see the what wave, you're very clear. It's only just appearance of water. You don't take it as real. You know what is really there is water, not the form. The same way. Investment of one's time, energy, and interest in the object will not be there. If the attention is paid, attention is not paid to the object. You not pay attention to the object if you know it is not real. To know it is not real, you must, isn't it, cognitively withdraw yourself from the mind and objectify the mind. So learning to be objective towards one's own mind is very important in order to shift one's identity carefully from the entire anatma body mind and scoppers. If I is identified with the mind, then naturally, helplessly, the entire identity will be there with the entire complex, body, mind, and complex. Is it clear? Therefore, at least you know, aham nijabodha rupa sa kashika. I am that the city of Kashi, who am ever of my own form of pure awareness. Got it now? Okay.
Mano nivritti paramo pashantihi. Mano nivritti paramo pashantihi. Satirthavariya manikarnika cha. Satirthavariya manikarnika cha. Jnana pravaha vimaladi ganga. Jnana pravaha vimaladi ganga. Sakashikaham nijabodharupa. Sakashikaham nijabodharupa. Sakashikaham nijabodharupa. Sakashikaham nijabodharupa.
And who is that power? Vishalakshi. Kashi Vishalakshi is that the inexplicable power which remains. Unmanifest as ignorance, which becomes manifest as knowledge. Who is knowledge now? What is knowledge? The manifest knowledge is what? Vishalakshi. The knowledge becomes unmanifest is what? Vishalakshi. When she is unmanifest, dark Parvati. The total ignorance, don't ever undermine total ignorance. Okay, total ignorance is omnipotency in its entirety. Omnipotency in its entirety, unmanifest is what? Vishalakshi, dark Parvati. Omnipotency, manifest is what? Whole Jagat is Parvati. Lakshmi, they give the name, different name, Lakshmi. As shining, bright, colorful, same darkness. With omnipotency. Because the power remains totally unmanifest. Isn't it? The total ignorance is what? Everything, the whole Jagat remains covered in darkness of ignorance. Nothing shines in deep sleep state, isn't it? As though nothing is here. That is why this Devi is always in temples. No, Devi is always in this, especially Parvati, as concept of Shiva, is always to be very dark. The Lakshmi is very fair. The same power manifest is given what now? Name is different. Same Parvati gets another name, Lakshmi. It's manifest. And the whole Jagat becomes, the power becomes manifest, the whole world shines. Then what happens? The source of the power becomes not, the whole attention is grabbed by what? The colorful world manifests things. The source of manifestation is not known. This is Lord Vishnu's dark. Got it now? Now, Simba, I want you to understand this. The whole Jagat shines, Mahalakshmi. That's why Bhagavan is called Madhavaha, husband of Ma, Mother Universe, the Lord of the Universe. Shiva is the Vishwanatha. He is called Madhava, Jagadishaha, the Lord of the Universe. Who is the Lord of the Universe? What is this universe? The universe is Devi manifests this universe. The universe unmanifest is what? Devi in her, the omnipotence in its entirety. Omnipotency is entirety, unmanifest. Ignorance is omnipotence in its entirety. And knowledge is what? Total knowledge manifest is what? Whole Jagat. We look at the whole universe. Where does the universe shine now? The entire objective universe, including one's body, mind, and complex, shines in the light of manifest knowledge. Isn't it? The universe is there. Even when you're fast asleep, universe is there. But why the universe does not shine? Why does the universe remain dark? Why does the universe remain covered in darkness of ignorance? It is there. It losing its status of being existent, it remains covered in darkness of ignorance. Why? There's no light of knowledge. Understand now? And the light of, when there's manifestation of knowledge, the universe shines. Got it? That's why what is it? Where does the universe shine now? The universe, now next shloka is going to explain. We are going to see that. The whole universe shines in the light of knowledge. The universe remains covered in darkness of ignorance. What is it not and what is that? What is that power? As knowledge brings the universe to light, what is that power? Retains the whole universe in itself, covering it, veiling it. Got it now? Inexplicable. You can only say what? Power of knowing. Do you see what I'm saying? I really enjoy what I'm saying. I don't know how whether I make you enjoy it or not. I really see it. That's not true. You can't hear. There's no question of wanting or not wanting. It's a question of understanding what is. You have to understand who wants, why do you need it? You are everything. That is why listening, repeated listening is very important. See, there's no question of I don't want darkness. There's no second thing other than you. Absolutely. The understanding comes means there will not be want, there will not be, isn't it? The want will resolve.
So you are darkness version.
Okay. It's very important to understand this. Okay. Mano nivritti paramo pashantihi satirtha varya manikarnika cha jnana pravaha vimaladi ganga sakashikaham nijabodharupa. This whole class, this Kashi Panchakam, it's really very profound teaching. It is not like other chant verses where the sentences are completely not like that. Some words are given, some sentences are given. It has to be unfolded. Okay. This is just for us to be, to see what is. The whole teaching is for us to see what is, how everything is. In seeing what is, you resolve I, you resolve this, you resolve Ishvara. Just see what is the truth. Okay? Okay, I'll stop here now.
मनोनिवृत्तिः परमोपशान्तिः सातीर्थवर्या मणिकर्णिका च ज्ञानप्रवाह विमलादिगङ्गा साकाशिकाहं निजबोधरूपा.
सि अहं निजबोधरूपा काशिका, अहं निजबोधरूपा काशिका, अहं निजबोधरूपा काशिका, अहं निजबोधरूपा काशिका. दट्स् मस्ट् बि योर् दट्स् अ स्टेट्मेण्ट् टु बि अण्डर्स्टुड् फार् काण्टेम्प्लेशन्. डोण्ट् वरि, कम् बेक् नेक्स्ट् वर्ड् विल् सी, अण्ड् देन् विल् केच् अप्. गो फार् टी.